lovely when you get to go to someone's place for dinner, and you know that they are famous for the good spread that they're going to put on, that you're not going to turn up and come home empty or come home hungry, because there's always going to be more than enough food to spare. And it's a wonderful experience of generosity, of hospitality, that experience of the host who just wants to make sure that everyone goes home fully and utterly satisfied. Because so often we imagine a God or a world that is really quite stingy. You know, we think in our fear and our anxiety that we're not quite sure what tomorrow will hold, let alone what 5 years or 10 years might hold. And so we kind of gather and collect and hoard, stock up all kinds of things, because we don't have that sense of that host who's offering us everything that we need. That's not our usual experience of the world. And it's a sad reality that there is enough of everything in the world for all of our needs to be met. And yet so often we waste things, particularly in the West, particularly in the wealthier countries, and so many people do go without. And it's this reminder for us of a God who is calling us into that generosity, that even in the experience of the widows that we hear about tonight. And remember, Jesus has firsthand experience of the life of a widow, because we believe that Joseph isn't on the scene when during the public ministry of Jesus. So presumably he's died at some point, leaving Mary as a widow, leaving her quite destitute, perhaps. And so perhaps that's why Jesus stays home until he's 30, to make sure that he's able to work and look after his mother and make sure that she is well tended for. Because in that world, there is no social safety net. There is no support system at all for someone who is a widow. So most of them, right through history until recent periods, had to fend for themselves, had to often beg or simply rely on the generosity of others, that there wasn't a source of income, that very few women were able to earn anything other than working in the home or begging. That were the two options that most women had through most of history. So these two widows, the first that we hear, who is a foreigner, an outsider, she comes from Sidon, which is the place where, at this period, when Elijah is preaching, he's mainly preaching against the king, Ahab, who even before he becomes king, even before he's married, he's already described as being an evil and wicked person. But when he becomes king, it gets worse. And then he marries Jezebel from the Phoenicians, from the Philistines, so a pagan. And she begins to corrupt the heart of Ahab. And so a lot of Elijah's problem is from both King Ahab and his wife Jezebel. And yet he goes to take refuge among a people who are the enemies of Israel, the Philistines, the Sidonians, the people who dwell along the coast of Israel and modern-day Lebanon. He goes there because the Lord has invited him and told him that this is where you will find this hospitality. When he goes, the drought that is affecting Israel is also affecting these people. And the widow that he meets is absolutely destitute. All she has, tiny amount of oil and a little amount of meal, enough to make just one final meal for herself and her son. And she says, that's it. After that, there is no more. So simply starve to death. That's the future that she is preparing for. She gathers a few sticks. Not even does she have enough wood to make a fire. She's just scavenging for enough to make a fire to be able to prepare this absolutely humble offering. And then in the bravado of Elijah coming up and saying, well, can I get a glass of water? And maybe you can make me a scone as well. It's kind of an awful moment in experience. Such black, dark humor that the Jews, unfortunately, are world famous for. Think of Woody Allen and all of his kind of comedy. But this experience of Elijah of imposing, not upon the bounty of someone who is well off, but upon someone who is destitute and absolutely poor. And yet the irony is that so often, I'm sure you've experienced that when you've gone to the house of someone who you know is poor, and yet they offer you the very best that they have, they want you to have anything that they might be having or they might be able to find sustenance from, and they so freely and generously often give it and offer it to you. And it's such a humbling experience when I've traveled in third world countries and into the favelas and places of absolute poverty, and yet these people are so generous in sharing their meager possessions with you. And so Elijah receives this joy, but he intercedes and prays as he does this. There is this bounty. The jug of oil is not spent and the jar of meal is not empty. And so this sense that God in his providence, even to someone who isn't a believer in Yahweh, she speaks of your God, not her God, but she believes and trusts because Elijah seems to be a person who is true to his word. And so when we arrive at Jesus here, remember it's the final days, the final hours of his public ministry. Next week we'll get the little mini apocalypse that we have in the Gospel of Mark. But this is the final kind of teaching moment as he's watching all of these very rich, ostentatious people coming with their fancy robes at the front of the congregation. Jesus just noticing and observing the abundance and the people giving out of their abundance, but then this poor widow giving the very minimum that she has, but everything that she has. And you could kind of criticize a religious system that expected even someone in that place of poverty to give what she didn't have even really to give. And Jesus doesn't seem to consider that. He just sees her heart, sees her desire, sees that, well, she has so little, this won't really make much of a difference. So even this, she trusts and she generously pours out her offering to the Lord in that moment. And it's such an invitation to us to rechange, to adjust our thinking from that sense of stinginess, that sense that I've got to grab and keep hold of whatever I can in order to protect myself, to this place of, no, I believe in a God who is good. I believe in a God who is loving. I believe in a God who cares for the poor and the widow and the orphan, the God who is protecting the rights of those who are marginalized, those who are on the edge. And so to trust that if we give what we have, if we offer that in love and generosity back to the God who has given us so much in his generosity, that he will protect us. He will be there to safeguard our needs. He will be there to offer the very best that we can receive. This slow transformation of our heart, to share and to give so that we can slowly be changed and transformed. One of the interesting things, science, is that we're beginning to realize that if you are feeling a bit anxious, if you are feeling a bit stressed and hard pressed down, that one of the ways to actually overcome that is through acts of generosity, through acts of service, volunteering in a community group. That begins to change you. Well, for a start, it gives you points of connection and points of value and worth. You're able to experience just, you know, validation around all of that. But that sense that once we change the focus from ourselves to others, as we were invited last week in the great commandment that Jesus gave us to love God and to love our neighbor, that there is this change. And in fact, people who do volunteer, people who are generous, are much less likely to get sick and much less likely to die of a whole range of different diseases. It actually provides protection against a whole series of different infections and cognitive events. So it's a powerful reminder of the generosity of God calling us and inviting us in this place, freedom, so that we also experience life, its fullness and abundance.